Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a textbook, and I love films. As Lewis Hamilton once said, I'm willing to take any amount of pain to win. I'd sit through all of the Lord of the Rings special editions twice through without sleeping if it meant winning a trophy. And it does in some places, Lewis. It really does. Every week I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Sharon Stone, Kevin Smith, Jameela Jamil, Ricky Gervais, and even Dead Mambles. But this week, it's the brilliant comedian, Kima Bob. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get 20 minutes extra chat and questions and a secret from Kima and the whole episode uncut and ad-free as a video. There's lots more stuff on there as well. Check it all out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. And if you have not yet seen it, you can watch the whole of season one of Ted Lasso on the Apple TV Plus app. Watch it, you'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll love it, you'll feel happy inside. It's a good time. So, Kima Bob. Kima is a hilarious comedian and writer who was one of the writers on Nish Kumar's excellent Hello America show. I was very excited to record this with her. We'd not spent a lot of time together in the past, so it was lovely to spend this time together. And she was an absolute delight. I think you'll love it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 122 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by a comedian, a writer, a sketch show maverick, a rapper about Dr. Fauci, a singer, a songwriter, a guilty feminist, a podcaster, a hero, a yes. legend, a yes. writer on the Toilet Nish show, a...
Yes.
A stand-up beyond her own lifetime
there we
will
go.
Be remembered forever. Please welcome Boom. One of the greats to the show. It's the one and only Kima Bob.
Wow. I clap for myself. Thank you. There are moments in life where you say, how much does this person respect me? And based off of that introduction, more than I respect myself. Phenomenal.
Well, listen, I'm a huge fan. I'm very grateful to you for doing the show. Thank you for your time.
I'm happy to be here. It's exciting. I'll say, before we get into it, this was so tough because I think I have like a horrible memory or something. I think I just watch things. Mm-hmm. I let them happen. Like, I enjoy them, and then I just keep it moving. So this was really kind of, like, digging into, like, the vault, you know? Like, I've always been the kind of person that if you ask me if I have a favorite movie, I'll be like, no. That's what I say. I'd say, no.
Always with the same timing on the pause, no matter where or when that question is asked.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
And that's because you don't remember any film you've seen, or because you don't wish to be tied to any moment in time? You're like Doctor Who.
Yeah, I'm just trying to move through it, baby. I'm just always flowing. I think there's some standouts, but for a while, I never watched a movie more than once. I don't know, because for me, I think movies and shows are about escapism to an extent. It's about the story, like, where is this going to take me? And it took me until fairly recently to begin to appreciate other things about them and other elements of them. So it's not just about, you know, the plot of it and what I don't know and what I can't figure out. But, like, there are other elements to things, right? So how beautiful they are. And then, like, digging into the writing, like, why was that so great? You know? Yeah. But I think for a while I was just like, take me out of my life.
Yeah. Do you want to make films?
So I'm in a kind of, I'm in a TV show place. Mm-hmm. I kind of like the, like, episodic structure of things, where I feel like a film, like, it's like you have to encapsulate something ideally in like 90 minutes.
Yes.
You know, some people, they get really like bold and they're like, do you know what, this is 3 hours, enjoy it. And that's madness to me. But yeah, so the idea of, like, you know, beginning something and ending it in 90 minutes, as opposed to an exploration that could go on for seasons, I think it just sounds like so daunting.
Yes. But I do like an ending. I like to know what the end is.
Yeah.
The fear with a TV show is if you don't know what the end is, if you're told, yeah, this could run and run, I go, oh, that sounds bad then.
Well, how long am I going to have to watch this?
How long are you going to have to string this out? But, as we saw in the show Smallville, you can keep coming up with stuff.
Did we see that?
Yeah.
As in, did I see that?
You...
No. I know it's about, like, Superman in a small town, right?
It's about young Superman and Lex Luthor. Yeah. But what impressed me is, I think it was 9 seasons, and the end point is Lex Luthor and Superman are not going to be best friends anymore. Because they were, like, buddies. But they managed for 9 years to keep...
To be pals.
To keep coming up with a little bit more. He's a little bit more, but he still hasn't figured it out.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
That's good, bad stuff.
Yeah. Tell me this. So you've just finished working on The Toilet Niche, which I watched every single episode of. And
yeah, so
incredible.
What it's important to note is that's not what it's called.
Right. What was it called? I've called it that from day one.
It's called Hello America.
Hello America.
Okay. AKA Toilet Niche. And yeah, so it was a really nice experience. Like, Nish is a lovely person to work with, and I think a lovely person to write for, especially as far as, like, topical, you know, and, like, politically things go. Like, it's really nice to write for, like, a man of color who's not afraid to be like, this is racist. Because that's one of my favorite things to do. It's just
tell
great.
Me, in fact, tell me this, because people who listen to the podcast regularly, Nish Kumar is a regular on the podcast. He's been on more episodes than Bed Brambles.
And, how could you do this a million times?
We did end of year specials. We did stuff like that together. But the question I have for you, having worked on the brilliant Hello America on Quibi, tell us secretly, what's Nish like as, like, a boss?
I would say very similar to what he's like as a person, which is, like, really nice. Do you know what I mean? Because I've worked with people. I know, right? You're hoping to get something a bit more juicy. Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, just quite a chill dude.
Shame.
And I was like, this guy's going to be a tyrant. And he refused. He refused the entire time. I think what I really respected about, like, the way that he was like managing the space, because like I want to be in charge of something one day. Yeah. And so every person that I work with, work for, I try to like learn something from them. Yeah. And I think something that, oh, you're going to hate this. You're going to hate this. Mm. Something that he kind of showed was like how to be the leader of something and make everyone feel important, smart, you know, an equal in the space. And the team besides me, they'd work together on like the MASH report. They have like a similar, I mean, everyone's British and they have like a similar like interest. I hate politics. I now know more about them than ever. I also hate that now. yeah. So, but I think, he did a great job of like keeping me in the loop. So they would talk about some random British guy from the 80s. I don't know who that is. I wasn't alive then or here then. and he'd be like, by the way, Kima, Neil Kinnock ran for prime minister in 1987. And I'd be like, oh, thanks. Because I was like, am I young, dumb, or American? That's always like, I'm just like, why don't I know this?
Just checking in with the three.
Yeah, yeah. And then you go, oh, whew, young and American. A relief. A relief.
So, tell me this, because I don't know this about you. You're from Texas, right?
Yeah. Right?
And how long have you been here? And when did you move? And I mean, that's the same question in a way.
Yeah. They're similar, but different. Mm. I've been here for 4 years. September 2016 is when I came over.
Did you come here for comedy?
I came here to dig into TV. Well, actually, that I feel like that's the more like honorable way to put it, if you will. I came here because I was in LA before this and my life was a fucking mess. It was just, I felt very directionless. I was doing a lot of what the kids call, I think it's called like candy flipping or hippie tripping. I don't know. It's when you do Molly and shrooms at the same time. Oh, wow. Great combination. Yeah. I didn't really know anyone who was doing anything like I wanted to do. I had some friends in stand-up, but they were doing what the kids call smoking a shit ton of weed.
Right. I've heard of that.
Yeah. Are you familiar? And yeah. I can't say that I also was not doing that. I studied some improv out there, and that was lovely, but it just, I don't know, I just didn't feel like I was on the right path. And for me, structure has always been like quite helpful. Mm-hmm. So I decided to go to school because I was like, I'd like to write shows and be in them. And yeah. I don't know about this industry at all. And I studied abroad in London before, which is how I knew that it was great. I also knew that it was far away from my problematic family. You know what I'm saying? I was like, ooh, if you can't find a way to establish healthy boundaries, what you can do is move to another country.
It's so smart.
It was brilliant. So yeah. Brilliant. Still pretty effective. The time difference, it just throws everyone off.
Really helped. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they go, well, I don't know if I should call because I don't know what time it is. And I'm like, it was too late. That's what it was. Yeah. It was too late. That's yeah, so cool. It was really helpful. So I went to school. I dug into stand-up a bit more, graduated from a MA in TV program, realized that I'm not meant to be on that side of production because I'm not a good office lady. But yeah, and it's just been a weird full circle. And I feel like, yeah, it was a great choice. I feel like I'm finally like where I'm supposed to be, and I'm proud of myself for taking that leap, you know? That's also beautiful. Not candy tripping or hippie flipping.
But candy tripping, hippie flipping sounds fucking brilliant.
In moderation. In moderation.
Okay. Yeah. Kima.
Yeah?
I forgot to tell you something.
Okay.
Ah, oh, shit.
I'm terrified. Oh, no.
Ah, no, no. Ah, I should have said it before, actually. I should have.
Oh, no.
We've just been chatting away. And
having a good time.
Yeah, I'm certainly enjoying myself, but I've had this in my back pocket the whole time, I guess.
Oh, man.
Do you know what? It's absolutely, when you hear it, you're going to be like, it's so weird you didn't open with that, and I can't argue with that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You got to tell me. I'm dying over here.
Yeah, no, I should
here.
Tell you. I should tell you,
I'm
right.
Dying.
Yeah, no, I should tell you. You're not just dying. You've died. You've died.
That's huge.
It's big. It's undoubtedly big.
Yeah.
How did you die?
Ideally, not violently.
Agreed.
I feel like it's a sexy old death, right? Okay. So I'm in like my 80s, 70s, 80s, and I, like a rich old white man, have had a heart attack by boning my much younger lover.
Yes.
Yeah, good vibes. Good vibes.
That's a lovely way to go.
Yeah, so a kind of like coming and going.
Coming and going.
Yeah.
Like an old rich white man. I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's the vibe.
That's a beautiful death. That's my favorite one.
I think so, because I think people don't think that ladies who are, you know, geriatric are, you know, trying to get it in, but I'm determined.
How long had you been with your young lover?
Well, it was after a string of divorces.
Okay.
And so this was a kind of more recent love affair because I go through them so quickly.
Mm. And yeah. I don't want to say this, but the press certainly will. Was the lover with you because they loved you or for your money?
It was a combo because I'm intoxicating.
Agreed.
Right? But also with the financial aspect, you
that's
know.
A double whammy.
Yeah. And that's how you do it. You got to encircle them in passion and desire.
Yeah.
Just a confusion of love and lust.
And then drop dead underneath them.
Yeah. And that's they can lovely. Never move on.
Well, because they're stuck in a legal battle for a very long time trying to sort out the money from your will, I guess.
Yeah, the estate.
The estate is a
large
nightmare.
Estate. Yeah.
What a litigious nightmare that turns out to be.
Because
you've got how many kids who are also fighting over it?
So many. Because at one point I get so rich that I decide that what I want to do is do a lot of kind of teenage adoption things.
Oh,
so
sweet,
that people, like, I just want to get more people in on my will.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are a lot of, like, kids, you know, out there. They're 16, they're 17, and they're like, I'm not going to find a forever family. And I say, hey, I'm not a great mom, but I am rich.
Yeah.
So you can come be in my family. I'll send you to whatever you want. If you want to go to college, or I'll just like invest in you and you can be my baby or not. But what you will be is a bit rich now.
So you've had so many teenage adopted kids.
Yeah.
That your young lover, in a way, once they if they ever do manage to divide up the estate, it's not actually that much. It's about 100 quid for each
100%.
Person.
100%. They haven't done the math because they're a bit dumb.
Yeah. It's a shame because they've sort of, all of them, including the young lover, have kind of sort of gambled their entire future on your will and they each get 100 quid.
Well, you know, that's not on me. Because,
also, that's not nothing. That's not nothing. They can have a lovely meal. Or
100%. I'd say several meals.
Yeah.
Because they need to learn how to budget.
Yeah. They could have like 7 Nandos.
Yeah.
A lovely time.
Yeah.
They could go to Spain. Once they get there, they'd be out of money. But
they can't do anything there. But the airport, right? They might be able to get like a pastry and coffee.
Yeah,
classic thing
that.
To do in Spain. Doesn't happen anywhere else, but they could do that in the airport.
And then just walk to the beach. I would do that.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I hope I'm one of your teenage adopted children when you die.
I say never too old to be adopted as a teen.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you worry about death, Kima?
I used to more. I think it does feel like this, like, looming dark thing, right? But I think when I was younger, I was really, really concerned with it. And I don't know why, but there was one night where my dad was dropping me off at my grandma's house to spend the night. And I was like, I don't want you to go, because what if you die? Mm. And he said, and you could tell, like, he was just really, like, thinking on his feet. He said probably the best and worst thing, right? And he goes, hey, I'm not going to die for a long time. First of all, you don't know that. True. He doesn't know that, right? And he goes, how old are you now? And I say, 8. And then he goes, okay, well, I'm not going to die until you're 11 times 8. He just does math at this point. He just does math. And he goes, I'm not going to die until you're 88. That's nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
It's and possible. At that point,
and then, so then I was a bit soothed, but I just started like a countdown.
God, yeah.
Yeah. God. What? It was just dad brain, and he was like, oh shit. Yeah. Like, I don't know what to do with this. And he was like, well, I will die, but not today. Ha ha. Not today.
Do you think he said the maths bit to kind of confuse you and hope that it would keep your brain busy? So. 11 times 8, and you'd spend a week trying to work out what that
was. Yeah, I'd be like, what is that math? Is that really 88?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was weird. It was weird. But I'd say a bit less concerned.
Is he still with us, may I ask?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, so far he's stuck to it.
Because I'm not 88.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are the rules. At this point, he is obligated, I'd say probably legally.
Mm-hmm. Definitely legally. So you say you stopped worrying about it so much, is it because you're getting... You realize 88 is quite far away.
I think it's a thought that I somewhat avoid. But then I realized, I think when I was younger, I had this thought. It feels kind of egotistical. I was just like, I don't want to end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to end, which is a weird one. But I think as I've started to think about like purpose a bit more, like why, what am I meant to be doing here? What am I doing? I feel more led by that and less afraid of dying. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm like, as long as I do or pursue what I feel like I'm meant to do, you know, then we're okay. But I think it's a thought I try to avoid, I guess.
What's your special purpose?
I feel like inviting others to heal through healing myself. And a part of that is self-acceptance and self-awareness, right? And I think that until we acknowledge and own our, like, whole story, right, our whole life, we're not able to truly, like, accept ourselves or be aware of ourselves. So just kind of a mishmash of that, I think. And I feel like... stand up for me is a great starting place in that, because my stuff at least is kind of about understanding myself and the world around me and kind of owning the weird and crazy shit that I do or that I am, and kind of inviting others to see that. I don't know, do you know what I mean?
I love this answer,
you know.
Yeah,
but yeah, so it's around there, and I think I'm always kind of zeroing in on it more and more, but yeah, it's around that, I think, because I think just we're all sad little babies.
Yeah, we are sad little babies
wrapped in like I think we're all just like vulnerable sad little babies wrapped in like society's conditioning, you know. Yeah. And when you meet someone and they're like really defensive or mean or maybe even like overly giving, you know, like underneath all that, it's just like a sad little baby.
I totally, totally get that. And I have a thing where sometimes, I'm sure you have this, irrational disliking of people where it's like, I've got no reason why I don't like this person. And there's someone at the gym who like, I've got literally no reason to hate it. He's done nothing. He talks to people. You know what I mean? Like there's no crime, but I'm sickened by him.
He threatened your baby.
And then the other day I saw his baby.
Okay, and you saw his sad little baby.
And suddenly I'm like, I love him and I want to protect him at all costs.
Yeah.
Because I just saw his face. He was doing a stretch and he saw, got his sizes. He saw a dog and he did this face, like his face went all like a little baby when he saw the dog. Yeah. And I was like, oh,
did he love the dog? Was he afraid of the dog?
He was like kind of slightly in awe of the dog. He was like, there's a dog. And I thought, I love you. And I hope you're all right. And I can see you're just a sad little baby. And I'm sorry that I hated you.
It's a weird one. And it's always like a part of that for me is trying to understand my sad little baby better. Because there are some people where I have that feeling about them and I go, are you bad or am I bad?
Yeah.
You know? And then sometimes the answer is like neither, but just my sad little baby is perturbed by this person. Yeah. There's one person who won't like me the way I like to be liked.
Yeah.
Who doesn't talk to me, and she doesn't talk to me bad, but she doesn't talk to me how I like need to be talked to. Like I like to be affirmed, and she just won't do it, and it kills me. It kills me, and I can't tell. I'm still like, is this my fault, or like, are you withholding, or like, am I just, do I just need something from you that you're not meant
and
to give to me?
Probably they without you knowing, remind you of your mum or your dad. And
do you know what I mean?
Replaying the thing. Do you know the spot it, you've got it? You know that phrase?
No.
So I think it's a thing from a recovery program, which is that if you, particularly, and I think this with the guy at the gym, it's like if you hate someone or someone really annoys you and you're like, that fucking person, 90% of the time it's because actually they're like you. What the thing that's annoying you is something you fear about yourself.
Yep.
And so that's a question I'm always asking myself when I irrationally hate someone. I'm like, is it because I think that they're the worst part of me? They're the thing I'm afraid I am.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And it's just like you go, what's my deal? And then when you can't figure it out, that is the worst. Oh, it's the worst. Because I don't like to not like people. It makes me feel quite bad. And I don't know. But I think that's also problematic because you're not meant to really like everyone or love everyone. So it's just kind of, I don't know. But yeah, so digging into that and sorting that shit out, getting to know my baby and inviting other people to get to know their baby, because we're all just babies.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to find a baby.
Just babies,
just find
man.
The baby. If you
just
find babies. Someone difficult, look for their baby. That's what I say.
Yeah, spot the baby.
Spot the, have they got, oh, there's the baby. And sometimes it's just in their face when they don't know you're looking.
100%. When they see a dog.
And sure, in the telling of this story, I realized that I'm quite a creepy guy at the gym who's just staring at a guy.
I don't know what happens at the gym, so I just assumed that was very normal to do.
Just secretly hate someone across the gym.
Yeah.
For weeks.
That's what people do. They're like, oh,
Lifting and hating. Yeah, that's the gym.
Yeah. That's how you push it up, right?
Yeah.
Like when you're like, that I don't know if I have it in me. And they go, that guy. Yeah. Motivation.
Do you think there's an afterlife?
It's a weird one. I can't really decide. I don't know. I feel like humans are so fucking basic.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like we could be doing better, together, you know, in, this one. So when I think about, an after one, I'm stuck between the idea of us, coming back or us just going into, the earth. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, did trees used to be people?
Yeah. Yeah.
So stuck between that and the idea.
Are trees people who've been punished and frozen into trees?
Now
and
they're trees.
Just standing there screaming at us, but we can't hear them.
Yeah. Well, is it good or is it bad, you know? Yeah. And I think the kind of heaven and hell thing, I feel like that's a bit too simple and weird, you know? Yeah. Maybe I just feel like that because of The Good Place. I was like, whoa. Ted Danson really turned my whole idea of that stuff upside down. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's not simple.
Well, Kima, it turns out it is. There is a heaven.
Oh my God, am I in it? Because I died?
Yeah, you're in it. And it's got all your favorite stuff. It's got mushrooms. It's got MDMA. It's got music.
Lovers. Are there young lovers?
There's a stack of young lovers. There's teenagers who want to be adopted. But
I'm not going to have sex with them.
Not going to have sex with those ones.
Yeah.
There's every restaurant you could think of, and all the prices are 100 quid, which is all the money from your will.
Yeah.
But that replenishes. It's got it all. But in this heaven, they're obsessed. Obsessed with film.
Wow.
Obsessed with it.
Oh my God.
And they want to know about your life, but they want to know about your life through film.
Wow.
First thing they ask you, what's the first film you remember seeing, Kima Bob?
Well, first of all, afterlife people, thank you for taking an interest. This is great.
We've been following you for years.
This is
huge
great.
Fans. Wow. We're delighted to hear it, lad.
You guys are a hoot. So, the first movie that I have supposedly seen was The Lion King. So, I am told that my mother brought me to the movies as a baby. What a controversial decision on her part.
Yes.
And though I don't remember that viewing, every time I watch it, and every time I have watched it since then, I do feel a kind of like significance of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it does feel like the first movie I've ever seen, you know what I mean?
That's fucking great. What? So you were a proper baby? It's like a mother and baby screening or just a screening?
Who even knows? I feel like she was like that bold woman who was like, let's take this baby to the movies.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
Did she say you were well behaved? Because I'd have issues with this going on.
She didn't even mention my behavior, bad or good. I don't know if she cared.
I'd like to know the answer to that. What an opening movie.
Let's call her up.
Come on in, get her on.
Yeah, why not? I
want to know if when in the opening sequence of The Lion King, when they hold up Simba, if she held you up.
If she also held me up.
To the screen. Call her now, get her on.
She's like, Kate Kima. You are a little baby. I want to see if this... Yeah, so it did. It came out in 1994. And I was born in 1994. So I feel like I had to have been relatively fresh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're fresh. Not going to call your mum?
No. No.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, because of the time difference. It's just because of the time difference, yeah.
That keeps paying off, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What's the film that made you cry the most?
I would say Call Me By Your Name hit me with huge tears at the end.
Mm-hmm. In the fire.
Yeah, everyone's crying into the fire. So, like, the fire's burning. I feel like the fire lasts long enough for you to, like, he's crying into it, you're just, like, mirroring him, you're just, like, crying back at him, you guys are having a bit of a tear contest, and the fire lasts for a long time, but it's, like, as long as you need it to, then the movie goes off, and you're just sitting there, and you're, like, love. It doesn't always go how you wish, but it can change your life forever. And then you go, I want that. And then you go, have I had that? And then you go, no. And then you go, now I'm going to cry some more for what is missing.
Have you had that since?
No.
Hmm.
Sad.
Hmm.
There's still time.
Oh, you've got till you're 88, I think.
Yeah, but ideally...
That's how your that's sort of genetic in your family, you'll die 88.
Yeah, that's when it happens for us. That's when it goes down. But I feel like ideally it would have happened when I was like, you know, a 16-year-old boy at my, like, family home in Italy.
You think, it would have been ideal with an older, sort of inappropriate older person.
You go, hey, is this age gap incorrect? Is this naughty?
But your mum and dad go, no, we encourage it. Positively
no, it's cool.
It.
It's the 80s or 90s,
Do you cry a lot, Kima?
Yeah, like I was thinking about this quite recently. There's a special kind of, I think, relationship you have to have with people that you like watch movies with where you're comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because what I end up doing with some of my friends, it's just that little off to the side where it's just like, wipe it. You got to give it a little wipe. Whereas when I'm watching a movie with like my mom or my grandma, generally it'll like hit us all at like the same point. And then we're just like quietly like, we look at each other and be like, like I can always tell in a movie, like watching a movie with my mom when she's gonna do it, you know, like, oh, yeah. That's how I feel when I'm gonna cry. I'm like, oh, yeah. Release.
It's coming, yeah. Everyone.
Almost said release those tears. Oh, yeah.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
What film scared you the most?
I'm not a fan of horror or thriller. Yeah. I don't like to be thrilled.
Right.
You can do all the murdering in the world, but if you add like a thrilling element, I'm very uncomfortable.
You just want cold, brutal murders without any suspense.
No suspense. I can't take it. I'm too fragile. I think growing up, watching, like seeing those like Nightmare on Elm Street, like Freddy Krueger vibes, really unsettling. And like the idea of something like killing you in your sleep, because how do you avoid that?
You have to stay awake.
What?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So now you can't sleep because you might get killed in it. I think sometimes in the scary movies, it's like, don't go toward that sound.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But in that, it's like, be awake all the time.
Mm-hmm. You should see, well, you shouldn't. Paranormal Activity. You ever seen that?
No, I don't want to see that.
Well, the message of that one is don't go to bed with anyone else in your bed. Well, because
kill in Paranormal
Activity, there might be sort of possessed demon while you sleep, standing by the bed, just watching you sleep. You don't want that.
No, you don't.
What's up with
all this sleep death?
Yeah.
Because you're vulnerable, isn't it?
Because you're vulnerable.
Yeah, your brain is in a like different waves.
Yeah.
And not everyone, I do, but not everyone sleeps with a weapon in hand.
What's the exact weapon?
Just a knife. A butter one. So I probably shouldn't even admit that it's not that good, but...
But that's better if you roll onto it. You're probably going to be right. But it's still got
a bit of a...
Yeah, that's cool.
I just got to hope I'm about to get murdered by butter. And then that'll be good. Well...
So, okay, that's fascinating. What film is not critically acclaimed? Most people don't like it, but you love it unconditionally.
That's heavy feelings to put upon such films, right?
Yeah.
Unconditionally.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's big. Did you see movie 43?
Oh, wow.
Have you seen it?
That is a huge and bold answer, and I respect you for it.
I feel like some people are like not into it, weirdly, and I just think it's a silly mishmash of crazy things, and I'm here for it. I support it. I think it's really funny. I think it brings together, like, it gets so weird. I love weird. Like, here's like the level of like acceptable weirdness, and I'm like, ramp it up. Do you know what I mean? Let's take it. Boom. Okay. People are comfortable with the weirdness on 7, 8. I want to see it at 15, please.
You want to see it at 43.
Yeah, it was on 43, yeah. Which is just beyond. So I was here for that. Yeah, you got to see a lot of strange stuff.
Doesn't Hugh Jackman have bollocks on his neck or something?
Yes, he did. He did. There was a testicle neck thing going on. A fun moment with, like, parents trying to give the kid, like, a high school experience or whatever by, like, bullying them, which is just so fun. He's like, they're like, he's homeschooled. And then it kind of escalates where they're trying to give him, like, romantic experiences or whatever, which is just fucking weird. And they have, like, neighbors over, and they're describing to them how he has, like, a girlfriend. And then he's like, oh, my girlfriend is here. And then it's, like, a face on a broom. And then they're like, oh, what a pretty girl. And he's like, thank you, with the face. It's just fun stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like people hate things all the time, but critics can suck my butt. That's what I tell them. But not if they're going to like that. Then yeah. I say, well, you're going to have to do something else.
You're going to have to suck a different part of me.
Yeah, that you don't want to suck. Yeah. How about that, critics? But whatever they have to do, it involves sucking. That's the only way that you...
Just moving over different parts of your body, yeah. Sucking. Like, no, I'm still enjoying this.
That's
God
right.
Damn it.
No. It's tough.
Elbow?
It's very tough.
Suck my elbow.
Knees. Oh. Yeah, that's tough. But it's the price. It's the price they have to pay. Yeah.
What's the film that you used to love? You loved it. And then you've watched it recently and you've gone, oh, no. I don't love this anymore.
So it's tough because I feel like there are things politically that are supposed to not stand up, but sometimes you could just let it go. So I feel like politically Tropic Thunder might be one, but I still love it. So I'm not willing to let that go. When I was young and just, I don't want to be judged by you.
Listen,
I'm not going to have it. I'm not going to have
it. Did I judge you for movie 43? No.
Don't you even try.
I'm not. I haven't even started on judgment.
So maybe I'm judging myself.
Maybe you need to find a little baby in me that you think is judging you and wondering if it's actually the baby inside of you.
Yeah.
Just judging yourself.
Baby inception. It is. We know the Scary Movie franchise, yeah?
Yeah, I'm actually a massive fan of it.
Well, that's tough. That's tough. So I think watching the first one, I found it like so funny, right? I'm relatively young at the time, and the humor is just ha ha ha. And then you look at them. I don't remember which one it was. There was this whole like plot point around a guy at this, I guess, house that they're at having like a tiny hand.
Oh, that's Scary Movie 2. Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
That is a mad
and then you
one.
Just go, that's not a thing.
So nice.
Yeah, that's not. And then I forget if someone like smokes, maybe they smoke a bit of a reefer, and then they get like, I don't know if they have sex with the weed or they have like a giant dick or something, but then there's like all this jizz and you just go, mm-mm. Also, something that they did, I think it was the first Scary Movie, was they had, like, I want to say Carmen Electra. I don't know, one of those, like, hot ladies from the, like, 90s or whatever. She was running from, like, the murderer. And one of the things that was, like, the whole point of the scene is, like, her boobs are bouncing as she's, like, running. And, like, that just is, like, prolonged or whatever. And so I guess things like that, you go, well, this is a bit, I don't know.
Yeah.
Even like it's gross, not even like it's misogynist, but I'm just like,
it's like
there's not enough payoff, do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's a bit immature. But, yeah, so I think those would be the ones where I'm like, ha-ha, ha-ha-ha. And now I'm just kind of like, all right.
Kima, for the record, I don't judge you for that at all.
Thank you so much.
Totally
that means
it.
A lot.
Totally get
I
it.
I feel lighter.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Gamer, what is the film?
Oh my God.
That means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but because the experience you had seeing it will always make that film special to you.
There are kind of a lot, not to be like a lot of movies like this, right? Mm-hmm. But I think I'm one of those people, music does it a bit more where it just take you to a place.
Yeah.
And I think this movie kind of does that. So the first time I watched it, I was like younger and I watched it by myself. This movie is Bring It On. What?
Ah, great film.
Bring It On. You gotta bring it on.
Love that.
So the first time I watched it, I wasn't a cheerleader. I was a person watching a movie and I was like, this is funny. I watched it later. I was a cheerleader. I watched it with my team and I just understood it so much more. I felt connected to them and connected to it in a different way. And it was also like an interesting year because I was living in California with like my aunt that year who owned a like cheer company. And so I'm living with, so this is a like kind of tumultuous year in my life. Yeah. Cheerleading is happening, something that I'd never previously been really into, but something that I kind of almost had to do. It was like the after school activity and we were always like at a cheer gym. So there was a lot of kind of, I guess, energy around this activity, which was the central theme in this film, a film that also had to do with like an outsider. I always kind of find those kind of interesting, like it had to do with a person becoming a part of this world, which I kind of related to. Bring It On, baby. Classic.
You are the first cheerleader I've ever met.
Wow.
I don't think I've ever met
you. Do you know what?
That's probably not true.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you always carry a bit of spirit and pep inside of you. But yeah, it's one of those things where you just kind of leave it. You just leave it behind, you know?
I've obviously got lots of questions about your mom and your auntie in that year, but
Oh, I feel like it's a big one where I think that is a part of my little baby that I'm still kind of dealing with, because I think just childhoods are crazy.
How old were you at this time?
10, 11.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, around there. But I think the part that my little baby is trying to like reckon with is how much it was for me to deal with. Because I think sometimes when adults are dealing with like big things, heavy things, like, well, at least I felt like, I don't know, I felt kind of like in the way or like an afterthought, if you will. So it was just a weird year of kind of being like sent away for the best.
Yeah.
Being taken care of by my aunt who had always lived in California, whereas I'd always lived in Texas, under such weird circumstances, and no one really talking to me about how I feel about them. Then getting into, you know, this sport that I'd never really considered to be one.
Yeah.
Being a part of a team, realizing that I'd not been very, like, physically active. Like, I was very much a like watching TV kid. Right. So then being like, oh, my body can do this stuff. Like, that's crazy. That's very cool. But yeah, so it was just a weird fucking year, I think. And none of them have been like that.
Oh,
so
right.
I think because I lived there for that year. Mm-hmm. Then I went back to Texas, went back to my old school. But yeah, so that year was just kind of like a standout. And I think that's also why I have like an affinity for Los Angeles. Just I got to know it in a weird way then. And I, grew up a bit.
Love that. Thank you. What is the film you most relate to?
Mean Girls, baby.
Great.
So
fun.
Who are
you in Mean Girls?
I am Lindsay Lohan. Classic Lindsay Lohan. You gotta be. And I think what I related to with that character, because around the time I saw this, I think it was like middle school. So the first chunk, I guess, of my life, the little chunk, was in a kind of more urban, but not really. I don't know what urban means. Is that like downtown? Do you know what I mean? Not like racist urban, which just means like vaguely like hip-hoppy black.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like a suburb, but it wasn't like city. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I lived in an area.
Okay, one of those areas, okay.
Yeah, it was an area. There were more black people in this area. And we moved from that area to like a legit suburb. It was outside of Houston, and the school that I went to, but even like, so before when I was in the area, I was going to a school, it was a charter school, and it was, I won't be like, it was for like kids that were like gifted or something, but I don't know, it was a kind of mishmash of kids, and I didn't really feel like I wholly fit in there. Then I moved to the suburb, full of like white people of different like socioeconomic means. And there, I don't know, I feel like my social life as a like teenager was always kind of all over the place. So I was in smart classes or whatever. So I had my group of friends there. We kind of identified with that, like that was a part of like who we were. But then I was also like loosely in athletics, which is just when they rotate you through sports.
Right,
well, yeah. Like at one point they're like, you're gonna do volleyball, never got it, never good at that. Then they're like, now it's basketball time, never got it, never good at it. Now it's like track time, and I was like, oh, never got it, but you have to do one of them.
Yeah.
So I ended up like running really badly. Then in high school, a lot of my friends were, like, in band. At one point, I was in, like, chess club. I don't know why. I was just looking for something to do. I don't remember how to play that. I got into theater later on, and cheerleading was going on. And it was just a lot of kind of, you know, you always see those movies about, like, American high schools and how they have, like, the lunch tables that are, like, so divided and all these different things. And I kind of found myself fluttering from, like, these groups, like, from group to group. A social butterfly, if you will.
I will.
But I think in all of this, there was that kind of pressure to fit in and that kind of, like, popularity thing. And I think through different phases, I did feel a pressure to be a part of like a cool group, and watching Mean Girls, it kind of digs into how it's all bullshit, you know? And I really, really enjoyed seeing that. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And it's, everyone's just a little baby, all the Mean Girls.
Yeah. And conformity is insane. Like I love to this day when you see like teen girls and they, think that they're all original because they've all decided to like wear the same outfit.
You're missing the thing. You're missing movie 43.
Yeah, you're missing movie 43, the best movie.
Kima Bob, what's the sexiest film you've ever seen?
Oh, I think I want to go back. I want to go back to Call Me By Your Name. It would be a toss-up. And I don't know why the sexiest films I've ever seen are, like, one gay movie or another gay movie.
Okay. What's the other one? Here.
Blue is the warmest color.
That's the one.
Right? Right? And there's this, there's controversy around both of them, whatever. I mean, I grew up with a male gaze.
Yeah.
So, and the people are like, Blue is the warmest color, male gaze, and I'm like, lady gaze. Yeah, I think just like the tension, right? And I think whenever there's like like stuff going on with a person's like identity and what they like, they can't admit that they like desire something, I think that kind of tension I really enjoy. But yeah, hot movie. I just love an extended sex scene as well. I'm just kind of like, yeah. 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 Yeah.
I'm picking that one over Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
What, Keebobob, as a subcategory to this question. Troubling boners, worrying wide-ons.
Yeah.
What's the film you found arousing, but you thought perhaps you shouldn't?
Hey, is this bad? That's tough because I'm a horny little creep.
Yeah. You're a horny little creep. No,
yeah. Yeah. It's just the facts.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm not supposed to find this hot. I'll do two of them, but I think we are supposed to find them hot. I'm confused by it. One would be Howl's Moving Castle.
Right.
Cartoon vibe.
Yeah.
Anime vibe. I'd say maybe anime light. I don't know. I don't know much about the genre. So Howl is like the main like dude. And I think we are supposed to find him hot. Maybe not as much as I do. And I think what bothers me about finding him hot is like the voice is Christian Bale.
Mm.
And that's just disturbing to me.
That is disappointing.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's just a hot ass cartoon.
Yeah. What's your other option?
Edward Scissorhands?
Oh. That's hot as fuck.
Right? Okay. I get confused sometimes. I'm like, is this supposed to be hot? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's a passionate film about a man with scissors for hands.
Yeah. And that's worrying just because what is he going to do with those hands? You know?
Well, I think the thing with Edward Scissorhands, which I love with all my heart, there is always the question of why at any point did the man who made him give him scissors for hands.
Yeah.
Like one scissor. Like if he was like more of a Swiss Army knife and had different options.
Yes. Because
they were practical, right? You go.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have one scissor and then maybe you have a screwdriver and a toothpick on one. But all scissors.
A wine opener. Ooh.
Yeah.
Exciting. All scissors seems. Yeah. It's weird because odd. Like. He loves him, right? He like misses his father or whatever. But also you're like, that guy was fucked up.
Yeah, that guy gave
him. He could have easily gave him regular hands.
He was just about to. Yeah.
Yeah, but then he like died. He killed him.
Yeah.
It's a heavy one. And I guess the reason why I go, because he just seems like so like vulnerable. And you go, are you supposed to be attracted to this person, this being, you know?
Vulnerability.
He just like, I don't know. Well, he seems like. You're just like, is he okay?
Mm. Well, he has and got scissors for hands.
Yeah, so maybe not. That's a lot to deal with.
I'd like to have seen him go to therapy at the end of the film and just address the fact that there's probably some residual anger to his creator who he loved.
Totally. Such a complicated relationship, yeah.
Objectively, what's the greatest film of all time?
Tough. So I told you up top, not a person who has a favorite film, right? I will tell you a film that I really, really enjoy that I don't think enough people know about. The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Have you seen Dolly it? Parton.
Love it.
Burt Reynolds?
Yep. So I think what I love about it is it's like old.
Yeah.
There's that element where I think it might be 70s, 80s, something like that.
I think so.
And Dolly Parton is the madam, if you will, of this brothel. And it's like it's a musical. It's a musical set in a brothel. You know, Burt Reynolds is like this police officer who like is in love with her, you know, and he's trying to look out for the girls. The girls. I love the girls. They have their stories and songs and there's dancing. And I think I saw it when I was quite young. And I think any movie with like that kind of, like a kind of forbidden theme, if you will, Hedwig and the Angry Inch vibes, like any movie that has to do with like sexuality or like taboos, if you will, that explores that stuff but embraces them, I think is something that I've always really enjoyed. Yeah.
I love it. I love that. It's never come up on this podcast.
It's a good one.
What's the film you can or have watched the most over and over again?
I'd go Superbad. I'd go Bridesmaids.
Ooh, what a double whammy.
Yeah. I really love silly things. I don't know if you know this about me. I enjoy comedy. I like it.
This has come as a bit of a shock, but okay.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
And so Superbad ignites the teen boy within.
Mm-hmm.
There's a baby in me, but there's also a teen boy. Yeah.
a teen boy that you'd like to adopt?
Yeah. Mm. And I want to say, hey, I'll help you get a fake ID.
Yeah.
I think, like, just the humor in both of them is so delicious.
That brings me to my other question, which is, what's the film that made you laugh the most?
What We Do in the Shadows.
Is it?
Do you know what? I could probably watch that a million times, you know?
Do you watch the TV show?
It's so funny. Not in its blah, 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 blah. I can't figure out how to watch things here. Not in its entirety. So I watched a couple episodes and I dug it. I think I missed Jermaine.
Right.
I miss that presence. And I miss the Waititi.
Mm.
The Waititi of it all. But I did enjoy the show. I can never figure out how to watch things from inside the UK.
Mm. It is tricky. We don't like to be negative. We'll be quick. What's the worst film you ever saw?
Really mean. There was a movie that I was watching, hate watching, if you will, at Halloween. And it is a movie called Bones. It is from 2001. The graphics are really bad. And it is about the ghost of a neighborhood. He, like, haunts this neighborhood. His name is Jimmy Bones, and he is played by Snoop Dogg. And
yes! Jimmy Bones with Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, and he sometimes manifests as, like, a dog. And it was just really bad. It was just really bad. So bad that it was good. And it wasn't a comedy, but we were all laughing.
There was a phase of about 10 years where Snoop Dogg was making horror and pornography. Is that right?
I don't know about the porn bit.
Snoop Doggy Dogg's Doghouse or something, and it was...
I must find out about it. But that sounds like a combo. He was like, if I'm going to make films, what kind of films would I love to make? That's heavy. That's deep.
I'll have to check that.
That's beautiful. But yeah, Bones. I would say recommend also a bad goodie, Reefer Madness.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's so stupid. It's great.
This is about public service film.
Yeah, it's from maybe like the 30s or 40s, some shit like that. And it's like, these are young teenagers. They're good kids. Nothing's wrong with their life. And then they try a reefer. And like by the end, they're like dead and pregnant and all sorts of shit. It's amazing.
That sounds fun.
It's a good one.
Kima Bob, you've been phenomenal.
Thank you.
However, when you were 88, which is genetically when all members of your family die, which was a warning, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think you suspected, because you were like, it's happening at some point this year.
Yeah, you like, filled out your will. Time.
And in your will, you'd left £100 to all your adopted teenage kids, all your former lovers, but which by this point was a shit ton.
Yeah, so many.
You're in bed, and your four-poster bed is a massive bed, because you're very wealthy. And there's a young lover on top of you, riding away. You're having a lovely time. And they're very good at this, by the way.
100%. So good that I'm transported.
You're transported not just out of your body, but to the other side. And you come and you die. And your young lover steps up. You're like, oh, my God, I think I've killed her.
Yeah.
I rush over. What's happened? The lover goes, I think I killed her. I go, no. How old was she? And the lover goes, 88. And I go, that was
Don't
the
worry.
Time. Don't worry about it. Yeah. You're fine. I've brought a coffin because I'd been watching the clock. I was like, it's about time.
Yeah.
I brought a coffin.
You understand what dead o'clock is.
Yeah. But the coffin is the size of you, and you're not the size that you were because your young lover has absolutely...
Come on.
Absolutely. Let's just say there's sex ephemera all over you.
Yeah.
And it's scary movie levels of ephemera.
Yeah.
And which is a lovely thing.
That's how I want to go.
But it's it's increased the size of you quite significantly.
Yeah.
The surface,
even
the surface
though I was
area.
Pounded to a pulp.
You were pounded to a pulp, but then built up by the amount of effluvia.
Yeah. Phenomenal.
So, yeah.
Look at your vocabulary.
Yeah.
You're finding so many ways to say jizz.
Or juice. Jizz and juice.
Yeah.
As Snoop Dogg once said, sipping on jizz and juice.
Yeah. Laid back.
So I've come in, right? I've got to chop you up because you're not going to fit in the coffin as you are. Luckily, there's a butter knife under your pillow where you always keep it. So get the butter knife. Me and your young lover just chop it. It takes a while, man. This butter knife is not very sharp. I'm having to stab it in and pull it.
Not a great decision, but you know, it's just that's how I lived and how I died.
Yeah, she died
by the knife.
By the butter knife. Anyway, I managed to chop you up. I stuff you in the coffin. It's packed.
Yeah.
It's packed. It's jammed. There's really only enough room in this coffin for one DVD that I can slip into the side to send you to the other side. And on the other side is movie night every night. And one night it's your movie night. What film are you going to take to show everyone when it's your movie night in heaven?
I think I might bring Watchmen with me.
What a lovely choice.
I think so. It's long, so we'll get a time to hang out. Mm-hmm. At some point, you know, you get violence, you get space.
Yeah, a bit of space.
You get superheroes, you get a sex sequence in a robotic owl.
Mm-hmm.
You get a Rorschach being so strange, and he's just so broody. He's like, I think I'm better than everybody.
Yeah,
I think I'd have a bit of that, you know.
Excellent choice. Kima, before you leave us, is there anything you'd like to tell anyone to look out for or to watch or to listen to?
I just want people to listen to their hearts.
Kima Bob, you've been wonderful. Thank you. Have a lovely day.
Thank you. Yeah.
Good night.
You too. Good night and good day.
Good day. And good night.
Yeah.
That was episode 122. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and videos with Kima. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, and instead of writing about the show, write about the film that means the most to you and why. Have a look over there. People keep doing it. It's lovely to read. Often makes me cry. Helps with the numbers. It's really appreciated. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you so much to Kima for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Ladin for the photography. Come and join me next week for another brilliant guest. I don't think I'm going to say who it is next week, but it's another smasher. You know it is. I hope everyone is well. And that is it for now. In the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.